Welcome to Sustain and Innovate Conference by Performance Days and Sports Fashion by SAZ. You are listening to an expert talk from November 2019. Ms. Karin Ekberg, CEO Leadership and Sustainability, presents Succeed with the SAC HIC Index Facility Environmental Module.
So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here despite of lunch time, because now this lecture is one of the most interesting for my person, because Karin Ekberg now will explain what the HIC index is and how you can use it. And she's founder and manager of the consulting company Leadership and Sustainability and has more than 30 years experience in consulting and sustainability and industry experience. So, and she was the chair of the Sustainable Apparel Coalition Board and instrumental in the setup of the CDHC, for example. So she has really a deep, deep knowledge in sustainability. And be curious, and I'm very curious what we can learn about the HIC index. Thank you, Karin, for being here. Please welcome Karin Ekberg.
Thank you so much, Ulrike, for inviting me here and for the introduction. And hello and welcome, everyone, to this session about the SAC and the HIG Index, and specifically about the HIG FEM, the Facility Environmental Module. So it's a great pleasure to be here. Yes, my name is Karin Ekberg, and I'm the founder and manager of the consulting company Leadership and Sustainability. And I have been involved with sustainability matters now for more than 30 years, so I have seen the trends come and go. And I think that sustainability for now in this sector, and especially environmental sustainability, is actually here to stay. Social sustainability we have seen already for many years in the textile sector, focusing, of course, on the supply chain. And today I will give you an introduction to the SAC and the HIG index. But the main focus will be on the HIG FEM, the Facility Environmental Module. And we will also have time for questions and discussions towards the end of this session. The Sustainable Apparel Coalition is one of the biggest sustainability associations in the textile sector. And you will see soon why SAC is also really well positioned to grow further. The SAC has a vision for the apparel, textile, and footwear sector to produce no unnecessary environmental harm and create positive impact on the communities and people who work for them and come into contact with them. But SAC is not alone, so over the past few years, there have been two spin-offs from SAC. And one is of the HIG Co. That was only a few months ago. HIG Co is the software developer of the platform for the HIG Index. And they are resourced, really well resourced, and are already ramping up within the few past months. They have been ramping up the platform significantly and are also prepared to expand the HIG index usage to also even to other sectors beyond the textile sector. And then we also have the Apparel Impact Institute. And the Apparel Impact Institute is an association that fosters and supports improvement projects in the supply chain. So they work for brands and retailers, but their main work is in the supply chain. And for example, one of their programs is the Clean by Design program, formerly managed by the NRDC. SAC has a lot of members in different member categories, as you can see here. So it's not only a brand and retail-driven association. As you can see, there are lots of manufacturers who are members in the SAC as well, and also help develop the tools. So all the tools within the SAC, within the HIG Index, have been developed together by their members. And the HIG Index is a suite of tools. And what I really like about the HIG index is it has from the very beginning, now around 10 years, it has had the value chain approach. So SAC has from the beginning known we need to take care of the entire value chain. We cannot only focus on climate change. We cannot focus only on the tier one in the supply chain. We need to cover our entire value chain. Of course, the impacts may differ slightly from segment to segment in the value chain, but overall, we have an impact over the entire value chain. And so the HIG index actually covers the entire value chain in all its tools. And the different tools are, we have the brand and retail module, both for environment and for social. And it has been revamped quite significantly and is being launched now at the beginning of 2020. Then we have the facility tools, which are meant to be used by factories, by the manufacturing units. And we have the facility environmental module. We have also the facility social and labor module. Both of them are already in use. And finally, we have the product tools. And we have three different product tools. So the first one is the MSI, the Material Sustainability Index. And this index is life cycle assessment oriented. Also, if you are not a member, you can have access to a lot of information on the MSI. You can find it on the apparelcoalition.org website. You can compare different materials with each other. And then we have the design and development module. The design and development module is meant to be used by designers. It includes also the MSI, the Materials Sustainability Index, but has also other questions in it. And finally, we have the product module. It's still in its finalization stage, and this is more of a footprinting tool, very similar to a life cycle assessment, but a bit simplified. And then the HIG.org, as I mentioned, managed by HIGCO. The HIG.org is the platform where everything that is being done within the tools is being used for. And you can go there and register. If you are representing a factory, for example, you can go and register for the facility environmental module or for the facility social and labor module. For a factory, it costs around $180. So it's not very expensive, really. And there is also one more website that is coming live very soon. And this is in the wake of the transparency commitment that SAC has had from the very beginning. It has always been the idea to be able to communicate the results that the brands, retailers, facilities, and also related to the products, the results that we have, and to be able to communicate them publicly. So this platform is also coming live soon. And now I would like to focus on the HIG facility environmental module. And I will give you an overview first, and then we will give a lot of examples of specific questions also in the module. And the HIG FEM, it's an online self-assessment tool for factories. And it is divided into different sections. We will speak more about them a bit later. But for example, you have the energy section, you have the chemical section. And the questions are also given to the factory based on what type of factory you are. So there are a lot of applicability questions asking about information about your own factory to separate, for example, between garment factories and mills or dye houses. And then you will receive the questions also that are really applicable to your factory, to your manufacturing. And there are always three levels. In every scored section, there are three levels. So you move upwards from level one to level two and then to level three. And there is also scoring. So in every section, you can get a maximum of 100 scores. And then there is also an average calculated, which is also then 100. And we have annual cycles, so because you also report data, for example, your energy consumption, you always report for the last calendar year. So right now, the factories who are completing the module right now, they are reporting about the calendar year of 2018 and finalizing the 2018. So it's always a calendar year and an annual cycle in the reporting. And then it's possible to verify. This is voluntary. But if you want to communicate your results also externally, you need to have a second party or a third party verifier that comes on site mostly and have a look at your self-assessment and just verifies all the questions and all the results that you have. And finally, if you want to read more specifically about all the questions, etc., you can Google How to HIG and find the How to HIG guide there. And the How to HIG is a very long document, but it includes a lot of information about all the questions, the explanations why those questions are there, and also what you need to do in order to take a full score with that particular question. And now to the sections. So there is first one section which is unscored, and that's the section about site info and permits. And then you have the EMS, the Environmental Management System section. You have the energy section. You have the water section, wastewater, air emissions, waste, and chemical section. So those are all the environmental area that we cover within the HIG FEM. And they are slightly different in nature, and I will explain to you why they are different. So there are three different groups, and we have one group that is really about continuous improvement, about continuous quantifiable improvements. And those sections are the energy section, the water section, and the waste section. And here you need to know all your sources and also how much you have. So in every waste category, how much waste do you have in every category, your energy consumption, your water consumption, etc. And you also need to know what are your major drivers of use. So obviously, if you want to improve, you need to know where am I using the most energy in my factory. Am I using it in a certain department, or are there certain machines that are using a lot of energy? And only when you know that, you can also know where to prioritize your improvement projects. And then you baseline your performance. So you basically define your starting point. You set targets and you define an action plan, an implementation plan. And believe me, it sounds very straightforward to do this, but I work as a verifier as well. I often see in factories that they may set a goal to reduce their energy consumption by 2%, let's say in 1 year or in 2 years, but then there is no action plan behind it. And you actually need an action plan in order to make sure that you reach that goal. And you need to follow up on your action plan regularly as well. So you need to identify which measures am I going to take in order to reduce energy? Who is responsible for this? What are the timelines? And how and when am I going to follow up on this? So very straightforward, but still we often see quite significant gaps here. And finally, not finally, but you should also, of course, demonstrate reductions. So hopefully you also reach your goals or your targets. And finally, you will also demonstrate leading practice. So leading practice is even going beyond what you normally would do. And then the next group is about pollutant limits. And this is the wastewater and the air emission section. And here you also need to know your sources and volumes. You need to know the quality of pollutants. You need to control that quality and take action if you are, for example, not meeting regulations. You need also to demonstrate leading practice. So you see, HIG Index in general is always striving for aspirational levels and for leading practices. And then finally, we have the two sections that cover management systems. And those are the EMS, the Environmental Management System section, and the Chemical Management System. And those are very different. It's not so much about quantified results. It's much more about having the policies, the systems, and the procedures in place in order to reach your goals. So you need to have also qualified staff in place. You need to have someone who have time to spend. And we often see this as well. Perhaps an operations manager is taking on environment in the factory, and he is, of course, very busy with a lot of different things and doesn't have enough time to spend on the environment. And of course, also you need to follow laws and regulations. And you need to have long-term strategic plans in place. And this is something that comes over and over in the Higg FEM, the importance of having long-term strategies and not only one-year goals. And you need to take management actions as well. For example, regarding chemicals, make sure that they are stored well, securely, and handled safely. And finally, again, demonstrating leading performance. And the three levels that I were mentioning, the levels 1, 2, 3. The level 1 is really the foundational level. This is the starting point, the base level. And then we have the progressive level, where you move on from level 1 to level 2. And finally, we have the leading practices level, the aspirational level. And how you move here? At level 1, in every section, you first need to have all things right, so to say, before you can move on to level 2 and 3. So there is a gate there. And in every section, you first need to cover the questions at level 1 and be able to respond either with a yes or partial yes. If you have any, just one question where you have to respond, no, I don't have this, then you cannot move on to levels 2 and 3. So it's a gateway there. But then both levels 2 and 3 open up for you. And I mentioned also that there are scores given. So every section has 100 scores as a maximum. And at level 1, you can reach 25 scores. At level 2, you can reach 50 scores. And at level 3, another 25 scores. So this is the distribution of the scores to the levels. It can change a bit different if you have another applicability, a special applicability, but in general it's 25, 50, and then 25. And now let me give you some examples from some of the sections. So let's begin with the environmental management system section. And the environmental management system section has in total 12 questions, and you can see how they are distributed here at the different levels. So the environmental management system, here you actually have several questions at level 1, so you need to take those hurdles, so to say, in order to move on to level 2. And the first question at level 1 is about having staff responsible. And the question is, are one or more employees at your facility responsible for coordinating your facility's environmental management activities? And so you need to have someone, who is trained, who has the environmental capabilities and the competence. And you also need to have someone who has time and who has the resources to make changes. And then the next question, EMS strategy. Does your facility have a company environmental management strategy that guides long-term decision making on environmental impact? And here is one question where we see that many facilities have difficulties, and it's because of the long term. So what we are missing, and we often actually see brands missing out on this one as well, and that's the long-term perspective. And the strict requirement here is that you have a long-term strategy that goes at least 3 years into the future. So in 2018, you need to have a strategy that goes into 2021, and it needs to be rolling. So every year, you always have to have 3 years into the future. And that takes some thinking among the facilities to adopt to this and really take that long term. So they may have had annual goals previously, or they may have had no goals at all. And so the long term perspective is really important here. And then the next question is also a tricky one, and that is about identifying environmental impacts. The question is, has your facility identified the significant environmental impacts associated with current operations within the factory premises? And this is about not identifying all environmental impacts that are there, because you probably will have a very, very long list, but it is really about knowing where are my major impacts? What are the most significant impacts for me? So, for example, is it energy consumption? Is it chemicals management that is most important for me? Perhaps I haven't really done anything when it comes to chemicals management previously, so I need to catch up there. And it may also be a mix of a few areas, but usually it's not all of them exactly as much. So this is important. And here we see two different paths by the facilities. And one is, as you know, when you build a factory, you have to do, and in most countries you have legislation about this, you have to develop an environmental impact assessment. So factories will have this. But here, very seldom you have the summarized results. So you still don't have the most significant impacts. And of course, also, that impact assessment may already be several years old or really old and is outdated. The other path we see is where factories have a really, really good and very detailed method, a sort of a risk assessment where they look into each and every department and look at all of the different activities that are going on in those departments, and then they look at all environmental impact categories and evaluate them. And so they have a long, long list of very, very detailed results, and some are lower, some are higher. But what they don't do is, again, to summarize the results. So they still have this, you know, long list of environmental impacts that are, they feel are important. So the next step, the final step, is really to summarize, to take the ones where you have the highest values. If you have a method where the number gets high, if the risk is high or the impact is high, and then decide those are the areas that I really want to focus on. And even using the HIG FEM and trying to improve in all areas at the same time is usually quite difficult for most factories. And then regarding energy and greenhouse gases, so here in this section, you have lots of different questions. So you need to track all energy and fuel sources, and you need to know how much you consume. You also need to identify which factors contribute the most. And you need to set either absolute or normalized baselines. So that is defining your starting point for energy. And then, of course, you need to set absolute or normalized targets as well. And the question, of course, is, shall I set absolute targets or shall I set normalized targets? And it's really up to the factory. But if you have manufacturing and in 1 year you are producing at, let's say, 95% of your capacity and you have a certain energy consumption, but next year perhaps you are producing only at 85% of your capacity, you will produce less products and you will also probably use less energy. So you have reduced your energy consumption, but you haven't done it by actually saving energy. You haven't implemented any measure to get there. It was just the fact that you produced less. So obviously, it is a bit difficult to have saving goals if this would happen to you. And that's the reason why usually we try to normalize the energy consumption, which means that you relate your energy consumption to a production value. For example, unit of products. So if you are producing only T-shirts, for example, you can divide your total energy consumption by the total number of T-shirts that you produce. Of course, it may be difficult if you are producing a lot of different products and it is changing from year to year, then it's again different because a T-shirt may use a certain amount of energy to produce, but a jacket would produce probably more. But still, the normalization is often the one path that factories take because it is more realistic and it's easier to follow than year by year. And then, of course, as I talked about already, you need to have an action plan and you need to demonstrate energy reductions against your baseline. And the questions look like this. So here you have only one question at level one. So it's actually very easy to reach the first 25 scores here and have the gate open to levels 2 and 3. You only need to know which different energy sources you have and how much you consume of those energy sources. And we see here most factories actually have this. So this is an easy question. And then at level two, as you can see, it gets trickier. There you really need to have your targets and your baseline and also reduce consumption. And at level three, we have one question that is actually not scored, and that is about calculating your scope three emissions, which means your emissions from your suppliers as well, and from your perhaps service providers as well. And the first question at level one, as I said, tracking energy sourcing, knowing each and every energy source that you have and the consumption there. And the second question is about the energy baselines. And I would like to show you here also what it looks like. So here you see a screenshot from the questionnaire, from the online questionnaire, what it looks like, where you fill, which information you fill in. And finally, just a few words about the chemicals management section. And the chemicals management section, this section has been developed together with the SETDHC, the Zero Discharge of Hazardous Chemicals program. And it basically fulfills the requirements that SETDHC has on an on-site audit and a self-assessment as well. And therefore, the section is also very long. So this is the longest section, probably the most, for most factories, the most difficult section. It has 23 questions in total. And even level one has 13 questions, which are quite challenging. And I will give you just a few examples. Even the first question is a question where some facilities have difficulties with. And this is knowing exactly which chemicals you are using in your factory and having a complete inventory of all those chemicals, including also CAS number, knowing which are the most significant hazards. Have I checked them against my restricted substances list and my manufacturing restricted substances list, my MRSL? Do I know the supplier? Do I know exactly where this chemical or chemical formulation is used, etc.? So it's a very, very comprehensive list you need to develop, even just with the first question. And then the next is about safety data sheets. And this is something, it's really not a difficult task, but it takes some time to collect safety data sheets and to keep them also up to date. And what we sometimes see, you need to have them in the places in the factory where chemicals are stored and used as well. And sometimes we see that this is missing. So what do you do then if you have a spill, for example, or if an accident happens? And the people handling the chemicals, they don't have access to the safety data sheets. It may really be a big problem. So this is also a hard requirement, let's say, by SAC and by the HIG index, that you need to have those safety data sheets available. And by the way, a general comment also about the requirements. You actually need to have quite a lot of documentation available for the HIG FEM, and the guide to the HIG FEM also specifies exactly what you need to have in order to get a yes, so to say, to your question. And it's quite strict and quite detailed also in how it is explained. So this is a help, actually, for the factories. It's also a help for the verifiers, because there is not so much ambiguity. There is some, but there is not so much as it could be if you just have the questions and no really, so to say, sample answers and the correct answers. And then, of course, training. So all people using chemicals or handling chemicals or buying chemicals should be trained. They should know what are the hazardous chemicals we are using and what are the problems we have with them. And they should also be able to drive improvements and apply, for example, the MRSL from SETDHC and make sure that they use less and less harmful chemicals. And finally, spill and emergency response plan, and also selecting and buying chemicals. So those are a few examples only of the 23 questions that we have in the chemicals section. And with that, I have come to the end of my presentation, and now I would like to open up for your questions and your input as well, if you have remarks and comments.
Thank you. My name is João Matias from YKK. I have a few questions, actually. Maybe we don't have time. I can't ask all of what I want to know, but this normalized targets for energy, water use, and everything. Well, there's the absolute and normalized targets that factories can choose which one they prefer, but like you said, it's preferable to have normalized targets, right? Then,
in my opinion, yes, because it's usually easier to compare than year by year, yes.
But if you consider that the apparel industry is growing every year and more products are being manufactured every year, even if in a normalized target you achieve a better efficiency of production, that doesn't necessarily mean that your carbon emissions, your total carbon emissions, are going to be reduced. And in the end, how can we achieve, you know, if you relate this to the Paris Agreement, to this 1.5 degrees of global warming that we want to cap? In this sense, are the normalized targets really what we need to deal with this issue of global warming, climate change, and you know, how can you balance that?
That's a good question, and so there is, of course, a need to have absolute targets as well. But I think at a factory level, it is better to have normalized, because then you actually also know that you will use less energy, let's say, per product produced. But obviously, the problem that you are talking about is that the number of products that are produced, that number is increasing every year and probably increasing even faster than the normalized consumption would be. And that is a problem that we don't solve with the Higg FEM. Absolutely not. That's correct. And that's where, for example, the science-based targets come in. So I think for brands who are using the Higg FEM, to increase the efficiency, I think that's really important. And for example, we heard about being climate neutral and offsetting your greenhouse gas emissions. And I actually see some brands who start with that without even reducing their actual energy consumption. So they already start with offsetting, but that doesn't make sense to me, you know? And so I think you need to have both. You need to have be much more efficient with resources, but then we also need to have a ceiling somewhere. And that is, in my view, for climate change, that is where the science-based targets come in. Do you see? So Higg FEM doesn't solve that problem. Do you agree?
Yes, and that makes everything more complex, but yeah,
yes, it's, that's true.
Something that we have to work on, yeah.
Yeah.
I have more questions, but if anyone else.
Karen, thank you for that. I don't know how much this audience realise how wise you are in this area, and you've looked at a lot of different standards. You've educated me a vast amount. The Higg from SAC, I adore, but it is not perfect. Where do you feel that it needs to improve the most?
Okay. Great question. Charles, thank you so much for the nice words. Thank you. And do you mean the Higg FEM or the Higg index in total? The Higg index in general. Yes, I think it needs to speed up and get finished with the brand and retail module and with the product module. And then I think that adoption needs to increase much more. So I think we have seen a really great adoption by facilities, by factories. There are probably around 10,000 accounts on Higg Core for the Higg FEM. So lots of factories is using it. And I would like to see also brands and retailers stepping up to the plate and using the BRM, the brand and retail module, but also the product module. So that is, I think, adoption is really one important step. And then also I mentioned transparency and communication, and that also needs to be done much faster that we can communicate, or the people using the tools can communicate the results.
Hi, I'm Hege from Pierre Bari, Norway. Just had a question regarding sub-suppliers, because if you're a garment manufacturer, then you might not have the biggest impact. Maybe there's more in the dyeing or in some other factories in the supply chain. So how do you cover like the supply chain? If you are a manufacturer, how much responsibility do you have downwards?
Yeah, as a brand or as a...
Or if you are a factory that has implemented this system, like, do you have, how much do you have to report from your own supply chain? You mentioned briefly in one of the questions, but
Can
you elaborate more?
Yes, for sure. And I agree with you. So I was responsible for environment globally at Adidas. And when I joined Adidas in 2009 and we developed our environmental strategy and our environmental supply chain management strategy, we actually said we want to not focus too much on our garment factories. We want to focus on our mills and dye houses. So I think that question is very relevant. And we know that the impacts, especially when it comes to water, energy, chemicals, are more significant further upstreams than in the tier one, in the garment factories. And so in the HIG FEM, you have questions in the EMS section and in the chemical management sections where the facilities are asked how they are basically pushing upwards the tools and asking their suppliers and also subcontractors to work with the tools. So there are questions like that. And we also see that is still a big step for many to begin doing that. And obviously, because right now you see many brands, and I think that's good, they seek to manage tier one and they seek to manage tier two, and they are moving upstreams as well, managing the supply chain very far upstream. But of course, the further away the suppliers or the cotton growers come from the brand, the more difficult it is to control. So I think the ideal situation would be that you have this cascading system that you mentioned, where you have your tier one asking your tier twos and their subcontractors, and then the same, the tier two are asking their suppliers, etc. And also already now we see that there are many mills and dye houses already using the HIG FEM. So it's totally applicable to this group of suppliers. Did that answer your question?
Sorry, one more question. You said that the HIG company is planning to expand the HIG index to other industries, not just the apparel industry anymore. Isn't there a risk of the HIG index losing its identity, kind of, because it's trying to embrace so many different industries?
I don't know. Why do you think so?
I don't know, because manufacturing of textiles must be very different from manufacturing of other things. Yeah. I don't know, consumer electronics, for example. And if you try to create one single assessment system for all those different industries...
No, you cannot do that. So that's great that you asked that question. You cannot do that. You need to adjust and revise the HIG FEM questions in order to include also other sectors. So there are, of course, many questions that are quite... that are applicable, that are universal. For example, the EMS questions are quite universal. But then if we come to the chemical section, they are, of course, specifically designed to meet the needs of the textile sector. And they may not be applicable to hardware goods, for example. So that is what needs to happen. If the HIG Co. will be able to expand and include other sectors, they actually need to do that work to adjust the HIG FEM to be appropriate and relevant to other sectors as well. So they would need to do that basically sector by sector in a sort of a stakeholder engagement process. So they cannot just by themselves change the content, for example.
Hello, I'm Volker, and a question: can you estimate the annual costs using the FEM module and also the verifying audits?
Yeah, to use it, You need to buy that module, the self-assessment, and then if you want to get verified, you also need to buy that VFEM module. So that is, let's say, $350 for both modules, more or less. There are sometimes also campaigns from HICO where you can buy it a bit cheaper. But then, of course, you need to have someone who takes care of it internally. So you need to have that person responsible. In a garment factory, you don't always need to have one person working full-time. It can be someone working perhaps half-time, but also probably not 5 or 10%. That would not be enough. So you need that staff. And then for the verification, and then to complete the self-assessment and to gather all the information that you need there, probably one person would need, let's say, at least 1 week, if they have the information also readily available. And of course, what happens is that when they begin to complete the self-assessment, they see, oh, we need to have this document. We don't have the inventory. Now we need to create that inventory. We didn't have a goals and action plan, etc. So that takes time as well. And the verification itself is not that expensive. It's basically a 1 day, 2 day, or 3 day on-site exercise where the verifier is paid on a daily fee. And it differs, of course, from region to region.
Sorry, last one. Can you tell us more about this public disclosure website that is going to be released in 2020?
Sorry, I cannot tell so much about it. I know that every member will be able to present themselves there, but also, for example, manufacturers who have been using the HIG, FEM or FSLM, that they can present themselves. But I haven't seen any additional information yet. Yeah, so sorry for that.
This was so interesting, Karin. Thank you so much for
Thanks,
this
Ulrike.
Deep insights into this fabulous tool. Yeah, indeed. I really
Thanks
love
so
it.
Much.
So if anybody wants to meet Karin after the show or talk to her, feel free to contact her here. And in a few minutes, there will be the next interesting lecture. Nicholas Allen will be here from Patagonia talking to Charles Ross about more sustainable topics. So thank you so much. Thank you, Karin. And
thank you.
Good work.
Thank you, everyone.
Have a good fair.
Thank you for listening to Sustain and Innovate Conference by Performance Days and Sports Fashion by SAZ. To get your free ticket for the next fair or listen to other expert talks, go to performancedays.com. Copyright November 2019 by Design and Development GmbH Textile Consult. All rights are reserved.